welcome to The Big Thing on Total Soccer Show, the show where we dig into one of the meatiest topics in the beautiful game. Today, we're talking about one of the best and most informed teams in the world, Inter Milan. The Nerazzurri currently sit 15 points clear at the top of Serie A. They're still alive in the Champions League, and they're on a 12-game winning streak in all competitions. It's clear they're a cut above the rest of Serie A right now, and some of the soccer they've been playing has been nothing short of sensational. So, how good is this Inter team? What is the secret to their success? And can they go one step further in the Champions League this season by winning it for the first time since 2010? Ciao ragazzi, my name is Ryan Bailey. Joining me to talk all things Inter, we have Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor.
Ciao, principessa.
Okay, Graham, ciao to you.
Hello, Ryan Bailey. I didn't do it in Italian, but I'm doing the hand gesture, so that's as good as fluent Italian.
Thank you for not calling me a princess like Taylor just did. Hello, Joe.
Hello. I also won't call you a princess, Ryan. I'll just say hello.
I am a princess, though. I'm a very pretty one. Thank you, Joe Lowry. Good to have you here.
I'm sorry that I was just channeling My Life is Beautiful. That's the Italian I know right there for you.
There you go. La Dolce Vita, indeed. And they're certainly having La Dolce Vita out there in Milan at the moment, Taylor. Very, very impressive stuff. Did we see this coming, them being sort of as dominant as they are right now, I suppose,
nope.
Is my opening question for you?
Did not. Especially given ownership issues, given financial issues that they have had, the inability to spend big compared to, I think, other big spenders, big clubs in Europe. I did not expect this from them, and it's, I think, one that maybe Graham has been a little bit more on board the hype train earlier. For me, I was very cautious in my enthusiasm for Inter, but as we've watched them more and more this season, they are exceptionally good and exceptionally adaptable, which I think is a thing that I'm really coming to appreciate about the best clubs in Europe and in international as well. Inter are just so good in so many different ways and can beat you in so many different ways. They are supremely fun to watch.
Joe, how good are they? Are they hyped enough for how good they are, is my question for you.
Hey, so if I'm a little slow to answer questions or maybe I'm not as eloquent today, it's just because I'm watching that Hakan Çalhanoğlu pass on repeat, the one he had against Juventus. That's just playing in the background, and I'm mostly paying attention to that and less to what we're all talking about. No, this team is unbelievable. And I have been on the hype train pretty early on this team. Like, the quality is just so there, and the team fits together so well. They were pretty much always the title favorites coming into this season, in my mind, for Serie A, and they pulled away from Juventus in a real way. 72 points. They're waltzing to the title in Serie A right now. They're 15 points clear of Juventus to a 57. They've lost two games all season long. They haven't lost since December 20th versus Bologna and haven't drawn a game since December 29th at Genoa. So this team is really, really hot right now. The thing that fuels them is the attack. Now, I'll get onto the defense in a second, which is also excellent. But they lead Serie A in goals with 69. They have 12 more than any other team in the league. They lead Serie A in expected goals. They are great in open play. They're great on set pieces as well. They have 12 set piece goals, according to Opta. That is also the most in Serie A. The attack is the reason to watch this team, but they are also brutally effective against the ball as well. They've only allowed 13 goals the entire year, which is 8 fewest than the next closest team, also Juventus, who have 21 goals allowed. They're the best defensive set-piece team in Serie A, according to Opta as well. Then the sweet spot at times for this club, well, the real sweet spot genuinely is when Hakan Çalhanoğlu gets on the ball at the base of midfield and does stuff like that. Listener, just go watch it. Go watch it again if you've seen it already. I don't care. Go watch it again 100 times. It's when he does stuff like that or the ball is on Lautaro Martinez's foot. But sometimes this team is at its most effective when they're combining their defensive fortitude with the attacking flair that they have. They have not been the most active pressing team in the league this year, but they are the most effective pressing team. They've created 7 goals from high turnovers. That's second only to Napoli. So, like, they just check all the boxes. This team is so good. The pieces fit together in such an obvious way. There are only a few minor cracks in this team. They are flying right now.
Ryan, when you talk about the hype level around this team, or the hype threshold, if we have the player, the talent threshold, maybe we should have the hype threshold as well. Outside Italy, I think they are flying under the radar a little bit. But I spoke about this after one of their recent Champions League games, that there is a real belief in Italy. It was after one of their Champions League games, because it was James Horncastle who was talking about this on the UK broadcast. And there's a real belief in Italy that this is a special team. The consensus is that Inter are stronger than they were last season when they reached the Champions League final. and were generally competitive against Manchester City in that final. They needed City needed a Rodri raker to win that match. And then the discussion this season is, can they go one step further? Can they win the Champions League this season? The Scudetto is pretty much in the bag now. They've dominated Serie A. As good as they have been, Inter this season, I think a factor similar to Napoli last season has been the lack of competition as well. It doesn't feel like there is a natural contender for the Scudetto this season. Juventus were up there, but they've fallen away pretty dramatically recently. So where the rest of the season is going to be judged for Inter is in the Champions League and how far they can go.
But I mean, besides the lack of competition, Graham, they're still doing pretty well in
Serie
A.
Oh yeah, they are. Absolutely.
Obviously, yeah, as you mentioned, Juventus going through a pretty rough patch in the last few weeks, and Allegri getting some heat for that as well, and Napoli a pretty terrible defence of their title. But yeah, we can't take anything away from the fact that they are playing on a different level to the rest of the Italian sides right now.
Yeah, and I think one of the most impressive things about Inter this season is they have improved as the campaign has gone on. They've got stronger and stronger. We think of Napoli last season. Their first half of the season was better than the second half of the season. Inter have won 9 matches in a row. So yeah, absolutely. Well, I do think the lack of competition is a factor in them being so dominant, being like 15 points clear at the top of the table. Even if there had been that competition, I would expect they would win the Scudetto anyway.
Yeah, and Taylor, in terms of the Champions League, obviously they got a second leg against Atletico Madrid coming up as we record. The first leg, very much the poop house battle, and Inter saying, I was born in a poop house, you merely adopted it, etc. and so on. But they are doing very well in that competition too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even if they don't go on to win it, I think that my hope would be that they get out of their tie with Atletico, because I think Inter will be a more fun team to watch over the course of the knockout rounds. I think even if they don't end up winning the whole thing, I think winning the title in the style that they have, as emphatically as they have, and I think being able to hold on to a lot of the pieces in the offseason puts them in a really good position. So I think they don't really have to go very far. I think they're very capable of doing so in the Champions League. But I think winning the title with the pieces they have, selling as many players as they did, letting as many players go as they did in the offseason, investing in certain ways, and then finding value in other areas, it puts them in a really strong position for this summer and beyond.
It does indeed. Graham, can we talk about how different this team is in terms of personnel from last season? Obviously, made a few decent summer transfers. Marcus Thuram, probably the headline there.
Yeah, so at the end of last season, let's start with some of the departures. They lost a couple of key players. So Andre Onana left to join Manchester United. He was statistically the best goalkeeper in the Champions League last season, and also a really important part of the way that they played out from the back. Then you had Marcelo Brozovic, who went to the Saudi Pro League. I think most people agreed that this was a good deal for Inter. He was entering the twilight of his career. They got some money for him. But nonetheless, he'd been at the base of that Inter midfield for years and years and years. He was part of the furniture at San Siro. So those were two big pieces for them to replace. Jan Sommer comes in as the Onana replacement from Bayern after a season of being like Manuel Neuer's skiing injury insurance policy. He is a good shot stopper. I wouldn't say he is as good on the ball as Onana, but you know, he's good enough. And if you look at some of the signings that Inter made, they did a fair bit of business last summer. They bulked out their squad. But in terms of starters, I would highlight 3 more additions: Francesco Acerbi from Lazio, Benjamin Pavard from Bayern, and then the guy that you mentioned, Ryan, Marcus Thuram from Gladbach. He was a free agent, but his last club was Gladbach. Acerbi's 36, so I think that was largely an opportunistic pickup, but nonetheless a decent one. Pavard was another smart signing. We can maybe highlight later on the role that he plays in that back line. But Thuram has been, to your point, Ryan, has been a revelation for Inter this season. He's made a huge impact for them. He's a player in his career, I don't know if this is just me, but he's a player that hasn't always been easy to figure out because he's played out wide. You look at him and you think, is he a winger? Some of the attributes would lend itself to wing play. But Thuram tells this story about how his dad, Lilian Thuram, of course, pointed out to him that his qualities would be better suited to playing through the middle, started to do that for Gladbach, and that's predominantly where he's been used for Inter. His partnership with Lautaro Martinez is one of the best strike pairings anywhere in European football. He's mobile, he's got physicality, he can hold up the ball, he's also good at spinning in behind. If you look at Thuram's profile in FBref, you see a player who ranks highly for shot creating actions, for progressive carries, for take-ons. He is a real threat in a number of different ways, and I think he's been a real upgrade on Edin Dzeko, who performed that role last season alongside Lautaro Martinez, and Lukaku as well, who was never able to reignite the old fire in the loan spell at Inter last season. So yeah, I think you're right to highlight him as the most consequential addition that Inter made for this season.
Well, and he was always going to have to be, right? Coming in that high up the field and having to replace a lot of the goals that were scored by the two players you just mentioned, Graham, Lukaku, and Dzeko. They scored 19 in the league combined last season. You get a little bit now with Arnautovic coming off the bench, but Thuram was brought in from Mönchengladbach to be the guy next to Lautaro Martinez. Like, that was the idea, and I think it's worked out well. You know, Thuram hasn't lit the league on fire in terms of his goal scoring. He is very much second fiddle to Martinez. Thuram has 10 goals so far and 7 assists. So he's having a good season, but he's doing everything that Inter and Inzaghi, by extension, need him to do in that attack. I agree with so much of the analysis there, Graham. One quick note on Acerbi. He was with this Inter team last year. He was a regular starter for them, just was on loan from Lazio. So that deal was made permanent. I think that was a smart move by this team. Pavard in the back line gives him another flexible outside center back, opposite of Bastoni, who can add another number in midfield at times. Then you talk about Brozovic heading off to Saudi Arabia, and it's been Hakan Çalhanoğlu playing deeper as a number six. He's given them a new dimension in possession. Compared to Brozovic, in general, Çalhanoğlu is a more aggressive passer from that number six spot. So you go through and you look at the numbers, you watch the tape. According to the data, Çalhanoğlu is playing 4 extra long balls per 90 minutes over Brozovic, so he's more adventurous in that way. He's playing an extra key pass every 90 minutes, 2 extra passes into the final third, more into the penalty area, and some of that maybe set pieces and some dead ball stuff. And he's creating more chances. Like, he is a slightly different profile than Brozovic, who is a very good player, but Çalhanoğlu has given them more flexibility and a little more attacking verve from the base of midfield, along with all those other changes. The other one that I wanted to drill down on a little bit more is the goalkeeping change. Because, Graham, you're spot on. Onana was good in the Champions League last year. The numbers liked him. The numbers did not like him at all in Serie A play. He was he allowed, I think, 2 goals more than expected over the course of that season. He was inconsistent, at the very least. And now we're all getting to see intimately, at Taylor Rockwell, how inconsistent he can be for Manchester United.
Did something happen?
No, never. Okay. No F1 memes, nothing. He is not the most consistent presence, and Jan Sommer has been much more consistent in goal. He saved 4.5 goals more than expected in league play this season. He's just reliable back there. He's giving Inter Milan another layer of stability as they like to push numbers high up the field, as they can be effective when they defend in a deeper block. All of these transfers that we've talked about, in my mind, have hit. And that's the common theme. We talked about Leverkusen on a Big Thing episode months ago. Like, all of their summer transfers hit. All the big ones for Inter Milan hit. And when you hit on everything and have a very good squad that's already competing towards the top of the league and making deep Champions League runs, when you add good talent to that, you are a really scary team.
Yeah. I think Joe's dead on there with the way some of these transfers have hit. And Graham, I think you outlined a lot of the good moves, the solid business they have done. I think to the question about, like, why do they fly under the radar or do people overlook them, I think people, like, sort of casual soccer fans, put it that way, will look at this team and it looks like a bunch of rejects. It looks like a bunch of people who, like, oh, Mkhitaryan, like, he didn't work out in a bunch of places, he plays there. Oh, Çalhanoğlu, like, didn't he used to play for AC Milan? Hasn't he kind of bounced around? Oh, Jan Sommer. Oh, Benjamin Pavard. Oh, Thuram, didn't he leave on a free? Lautaro Martinez is always leaving, but never is leaving. Matteo Darmian, yikes. Like, and yet, this team, they all perform better than the sum of their parts or than they have in previous iterations at previous clubs. And I think that midfield three, which I'm sure we'll spend some time talking about, it's one that I would have thought, like, if you look at it on paper, if you look at the beginning of the season and you told me that's their midfield three, I would have thought, hey, like, tough times. I don't know how this is going to go for them. And yet it has been exceptional. And Hakan Çalhanoğlu, to Joe's point, has been better than Marcelo Brozovic, who was just so critically important for Inter and for Croatia. I doubt Çalhanoğlu can do that for Croatia, but it's a role that Brozovic just perfected and did so reliably, so consistently, so well. I did not know how they were going to replace him, and I guess the answer is just put Hakan Çalhanoğlu in there and have him play balls, and you'll be just fine. So it's a team that I think doesn't look as like sexy as some big clubs do, and yet when you watch them, you understand just how good they are and how deep they are. They have capable, reliable options off the bench, and also Alexis Sanchez, but they still manage to get results, manage to get wins, and manage to, as I said in the very beginning, just adapt as needed, change what they're doing to really accentuate their strengths against strong opponents and really capitalize on vulnerabilities presented.
I think that's a really good point, Taylor, about the casual fan looking at this and maybe seeing them as rejects, but I think that's also true of many other Serie A sides, just for the economics of how the European game works. So that's very true. But and that's true also, if we jump back, Graham, to talking about the front line and the changes made from last season. I was lucky enough to go to the Coppa Italia final last year where Inter beat Fiorentina, and we had Dzeko replaced by Lukaku in that game. And looking at that, which arguably two players who've bounced around as well, and Lukaku, a very divisive figure in Italian soccer as well. And that seems to me like a real key upgrade to that front two you spoke about they've got now, going from what they had before and the inconsistencies therein.
Yeah, absolutely. Lukaku, I've always been an advocate of Romelu Lukaku. I know this season he has been reinvigorated to a point, certainly by Daniele De Rossi since he's come in. But looking at him last season on loan at Inter, he wasn't the same player, right? He wasn't the same player that ripped it up for Conte's Inter Milan, that earned him the move back to Chelsea. And Edin Dzeko's had a great career. I think he is generally underrated or undervalued in terms of what he has achieved. But again, last season, it kind of felt like a bit of a stopgap solution. It didn't feel like he was the guy that Inter wanted primarily in that forward line. So Marcus Thuram, obviously a much younger player, feels like he's still in an upward trajectory on his career. I would imagine as big a club as Inter are, we're just speaking about the financials of European football, the realities of European football financially, I would expect he's maybe got one more big move left in him, potentially to a big Premier League club. So that's a big difference, right? Having two players that are potentially coming down the mountain as opposed to having Thuram, who's very much on that upward trajectory.
Indeed. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's dig into more of Simone Inzaghi's side. We're going to find out what makes him tick. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to The Big Thing. We're talking all things Internazionale in this episode. Joe, give us sort of the essence of Inter and how they play at the moment. For me, you know, I'm a Luddite. I see the 3-5-2, I see the fullbacks racing up and down, I see the exciting front line. What more is there to it?
Man, the Luddite nailed a lot of that. One of the things I love about this Inter team is that who else in Europe, who of the big clubs in Europe play with this alignment? Like, we don't really see this shape. We don't see some of the best play with two strikers in this way. We don't see it at the top of Spain. We don't really see it at the top of England. We don't see it from Bayern or from Leverkusen over in Germany. We don't see PSG do it in France. This is something different. It's not like Inzaghi's reinventing the wheel. He's absolutely not. But it's fun to turn on an Inter game and see a different positional alignment, to see an actual front two where those two players are both elite and excellent at playing off of each other as well. So much to like about how this team plays. The one thing that I want to drill down on, Ryan, that you didn't mention, is how technically proficient this team is through its spine. So yes, it is the racing wingbacks. Yes, it is the two strikers as the attacking focal points. All that is spot on. But the thing about this Inter team, for me, that really makes them so enjoyable to watch, and I think makes them so good, is how good they are at controlling the game with those players in the spine. You think about the three center backs and the three central midfielders, 1-6 and 2 number 8s, and there is a lot of flexibility in that midfield group. And there's a lot of flexibility in the back line as well. I went on like a three-minute dialogue about Stefan De Vrij stepping into midfield in the Champions League game against Atleti. They are total football-y, really, in how they play. There's so much fluidity where you would have, and usually it's Bastoni on the left side of the back line, who is one of my favorite players to watch in world football. His willingness to stride into midfield or to stride into the final third is absurd. Benjamin Pavard has played right back before. De Vrij is clearly not afraid to step forward into midfield. And then in that midfield trio, you can have Çalhanoğlu sitting deep, as he often does, or, you know, Barella might drop a bit deeper to find the ball. And as much love as I give Çalhanoğlu, Barella is the star of that midfield trio. Or you could have Mkhitaryan dropping a bit deeper, those players interchanging and rotating. They're so comfortable reading each other's movements, and they're all elite passers of the ball. You know, that is something that makes this team so difficult to defend against. You add that foundation and the fact that they're willing to sit back and absorb pressure at times in a mid-block. You add all those strong pieces of the foundation to having two of the best attacking players in the world and wingbacks who are quite proficient in the final third. And you have not just a really good team, but also a unique team as well.
Graham, what's your read on Inzaghi Ball? Obviously, a legendary Serie A striker, made his career at Lazio and obviously as a manager as well, but seems to be finding his feet at this stage.
Oh, I think he's doing more than that at this point. I think we're at the point of having to kind of reassess Simone Inzaghi. Not that I thought that he was a bad manager by any stretch. He had success at Lazio. That's Pippo, yeah. That he did a good job at Lazio before taking over at Inter. But it does kind of feel like he's starting to... The way I see it is there's a top tier with Ancelotti, Klopp and Guardiola, and they're out on their own as the best managers of the current generation. Before that tier, you have, it's a bit of a blob that includes Arteta, Xabi Alonso, Simeone. I guess you could maybe put him in tier one, maybe Postecoglou. I think Simeone Inzaghi is certainly in that second tier. Taylor is laughing at my
nomination. I knew Postecoglou would get in there.
He was going to get a mention at some point.
Of course.
Yeah, he's tier one.
For all of his many titles and wins and all that good stuff.
He's won a title in every country he's been in so far, apart from England, but that's coming. You know, that's in the pipeline.
With Tottenham?
Yeah.
Tough to win at Celtic. Really tough to win a title at Celtic.
Well, they're not doing it right now. So anyway, I think Simone Inzaghi is a tier two manager, but yeah, he's pushing into that top one. I think he probably is underrated, where I am in the UK. Anyway, maybe it's different in Italy. But when the big jobs come up, the big Premier League jobs, you don't really hear Inzaghi being mentioned. Yeah. He might be quite pleased about that. He has a good thing going in turn. I kind of want to see where he progresses this team next, but I think a lot of fans in England, certainly, in the land of the Premier League, of course, would get quite far down the list before mentioning Inzaghi as one of the best managers in the world. And I think that's where I settle on my conclusion that, yeah, he probably is a little bit underrated.
Yeah, Ryan mentioned like the economics of Italian football and how a lot of teams can kind of feel like maybe they have some reject players. But when you have the money that the Premier League does, it's always going to pale in comparison. And I think with that in mind, like if he were to make a move, if he were to get another gig, either just to leave Inter or maybe like the payday were too great, it feels like it's like a Brighton is where he is most likely to end up in my mind, because I think the bigger clubs are always so hesitant to make those sort of dice roll moves. Maybe on occasion that's not the case, but it feels like the mid-tier clubs in England tend to kind of look at for managers who can get the best out of a collection of players that maybe don't necessarily fit together on paper, or look for a manager who has an adaptable style or a philosophy that suits what they want to do, and then that manager proves himself and then he kind of moves up. That's where I kind of think Inzaghi could end up, which seems odd to say that like Brentford or Brighton could be where he goes, but I think with the financial might that the Premier League has, that feels sort of appropriate, even if it also feels inappropriate at the same time.
Chelsea should have appointed him after Tuchel, is my bold take from this. I'll give you my reasoning. So one of the things I love about this Inter team is when Inzaghi comes in at Inter, it feels a little bit awkward. He's taking over an Antonio Conte team. They don't really play the way that he naturally favours. He obviously favours a bit more possession football, and it was a little bit awkward for a while. Since then, though, I think the lingering influence of Conte has allowed Inzaghi to make Inter a more rounded team, because they still have that little bit of Conte influence in the way that they, you know, they play that quick transition style. Obviously, they're able to control games as well. So I see some overlap between the way Tuchel sets up his teams and the way that Conte wants to set up his team. And I think if Chelsea wanted to be successful rather than just being this like blob of nothingness yeah, and no identity, then Inzaghi would have been a good shout after Tuchel. But now that ship might have sailed because there's not that Tuchel influence to build on anymore.
It's interesting you talk about Inzaghi potentially going to the Premier League, Graham. I would think he wouldn't have the name ID among Premier League fans.
Chelsea hired Potter as Tuchel's replacement.
Right, no, but what I'm saying is if you went to a pub in London or anywhere else and asked people about Simone Inzaghi, they might have known him from the World Cup. I think that's where it would be.
Is that the guy that was born offside? The guy that Sir Alex Ferguson said was born offside? No, that's his brother.
Brother, that one. No, realistically, we all know if he came to England, it would be to Watford for 2 months.
All this is crazy how real that example is, Ryan. We're all on the same page. I don't think anybody's saying it's a good idea to only hire managers that your fans have heard of.
Yeah.
But, it always shocks me, and I continue to be shocked by how ridiculous some of the operations are, even at the biggest clubs in the world, where all the stupid stuff that shouldn't matter does matter. Graham, you're talking about Inzaghi and sort of his style and how they've transitioned. I think he's done a very good job as manager of Inter. I think he has been dealt a very good hand as well. He comes in. He's now in his third season, so he comes in for that 21-22 season. They just won the title under Conte, as you said. So, there was quality here. Lautaro Martinez already in Milan, Barella already in Milan, Bastoni, De Vrij. There were real talented players. Brozovic was already there. You can run down the list of a few others. So he had a lot of quality relative to Serie A to work with and a lot of very good players, period. But, man, the things that I think are so good about what Inzaghi's done is you look at even the rotation that we see now in Serie A because, let's face it, they've already wrapped that thing up. They're still competing in the Champions League. Inzaghi's not been shy to rotate his lineup. He is very practical about some of that stuff. And I think that is a sign of a smart coach who's willing to trust his depth. And then also, just everything makes sense. The front two makes sense. Having someone to bring Lautaro Martinez into the game and vice versa up front makes sense. Having, three central midfield players who are, towards the tail end or already well past their prime, depending on who you're looking at. Having three center backs behind them to provide cover, especially athletic ones on the outside, makes a lot of sense. The fact that with an aging midfield, you don't tend to press particularly high. Again, they press the seventh most outside of their defensive third in Serie A. It all just makes sense. It feels like Inzaghi has been very sharp at putting players in spots that fit their skill sets and trying to put everybody in a position where they can combine to be more than the sum of their parts. It's a little hard for me to separate what is the players at times and what is the manager. I've talked about that 100 times on this show. It's very difficult to do, but I have been impressed by what Inzaghi has done. And I selfishly hope, I kind of bristle at the idea that it all has to funnel up to the Premier League, even though on talent, it absolutely does. That's just the reality. I don't want Inzaghi to go to Brighton or to whoever in the Premier League. I want him to stay and lead a dynasty at Inter Milan. As a neutral, that is going to be so much more entertaining to have a club who is going out there and making Champions League finals, to have a club that is playing very, very good soccer in one of the best soccer countries in the world. I have absolutely zero desire to see Simone Inzaghi go anywhere.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that, Joe, because ultimately, even if he were to go to one of those clubs, maybe he then gets a move from there, and maybe he gets spit out when it doesn't work in 6 months. Or to Graham's point about Chelsea, maybe that could have gone well, but maybe also it could have been another Maurizio Sarri. Oh, he's an Italian, he doesn't get us, we don't know what he's doing, now he's done. And then, again, that kind of furthers this idea that, he's not quite at that level. I think staying in Italy and being celebrated for what he's done and continuing to have the kind of clout to build the team and shape them the way he wants to, I think you're totally right, Joe, that they're a very logical team, that the pieces make sense, that he has moved on from pieces that didn't and pieces that had bigger name recognition potentially, but then getting rid has allowed him to make this team better than they were. And I think they'll probably sell some players this summer, like Marcus Thuram. I would assume they will sell at some point. And when you remember that he came in on a free, that it's just going to be pure profit for them to then go and reinvest. And they are already making loan signings permanent from this season, so they're already theoretically going to be stronger, though I think one of those players is Marko Arnautovic, so you never really know there. But it just feels like they are continuing to do shrewd business, again, with financial limitations from their ownership in place. It still feels like they are a well-run club where he has the keys, and I think they will continue in that vein. So yeah, I hope he stays at Inter.
Ryan, also to go back to your pub analogy, if folks at the pub don't know the manager of a Champions League finalist last year, I think it might be time to find a new pub. Find a new group of folks to watch soccer with.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that statement.
No, I know there is as well.
Joe's never been to the pub.
It's the UK soccer audience is very England-centric, yep. And UK-centric, yep. I would say, is the point I suppose.
Exceptionally so. Embarrassingly so.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And honestly, for the younger generation, it's games like FIFA, which has opened up the continental game to the UK fan. That's another conversation entirely. And I suppose, Taylor, this conversation about we've spent 10 minutes talking about whether Inzaghi should go to England. It builds onto the narrative.
Yeah,
that's
why
we're underrating.
I have no desire to see this change. It's fun to have some team that is worth talking about, and there are plenty of them, but some team that is demanding to be talked about outside of the Premier League, and I don't want that to change.
Yeah.
I think ultimately it's because there's this idea that a manager can have... I mean, it's what I was giving Postecoglou stick for. It's like a manager can have success in a league, but until they go and prove it elsewhere, and then prove it elsewhere, and prove it elsewhere, there's this sort of like, yeah, but are they that good? Are they able to do it? Was it just the circumstances? And so I think the natural progression in our minds, or at least in my mind, speaking for myself, I've made Joe run away from his microphone now, is that like, well, then they'll go to the Premier League. That's where the money is. That's what's always going to be attractive. But I do think there's an argument for stay at Inter, build the dynasty, and even if people want to say like, you know, are you that good? You've only been at the one club. Like Simeone has done that, and he's won, what, one La Liga, two La Ligas? Like, it's not as though he's had an incredible amount of success. I think there is something to be said for staying at the club, building it out, and really cementing your legacy that way.
Yeah. I agree with Joe. I don't really have any great desire to see Inzaghi in the Premier League. I only bring it up because it's part of Inter's reality. I mean, if you look at the last, what, like, 68 years, this has been a team that has constantly had to renew from Conte to Inzaghi in a managerial sense. You look at last summer, like the players that leave that I mentioned. The one that this summer is going to be really critical for them is Lautaro Martinez. How do you replace Lautaro Martinez? Because he's having the season of his life right now. Obviously, we've known about his ability for a while, but he's playing at a different level this season. He's got 26 goals in all competitions. I think he's the new Luis Suarez. I've heard that comparison from a couple people. I really like that comparison. I think he's constantly on the move, smart runs. He's got a similar kind of wriggly quality to Suarez.
Doesn't have the same bite, though, Graham.
No, nobody does, Joe. But he's got the same kind of like near post finish that Suarez has got. So with everyone seemingly on the lookout for centre forwards at the moment, I'm kind of shocked there hasn't been more interest in him. There, a couple seasons ago, Barcelona really wanted him but couldn't find the money for him. If Real Madrid are shocking. Switching it to the other big club in Spain, if Real Madrid were buying a new attacker to fit their setup rather than just picking the shiniest thing on the shelf and killing Mbappe, I think Lautaro Martinez is the player that they should be signing. So that's kind of the reason I bring it up with Simone Inzaghi, is just the reality of Inter's situation. They are a club that constantly has to face this process of renewal, whether that's in the managerial position or the players that they've got in their squad.
Yeah, a couple other players I'd like to bring up, Graham. I don't think we've particularly spotlighted yet. Nicola Barella in the middle. Obviously, we've mentioned him time and time again on the feed and how important he is to this Inter team. And also those wingbacks, which I touched on earlier, DeMarco and Dumfries, who seem really important to the system. I just really enjoy Dumfries, for one. I just really enjoy watching him. Like we did, he's doing a very similar job to what he did in the World Cup in many respects. Just great.
He is the best Dutch right back named after Scottish town. For sure, yeah. He's a very good player. And there's not much competition for that.
Is there like a Danny Glamorgan somewhere?
Is there a reason why he hasn't been playing as much, though? Like, because I don't think of him as being worse than Mateo Darmian.
He gets a lot of suspensions, doesn't he?
Is that what it is?
Mateo Darmian has been playing a lot, right?
That's what I'm saying. But between those two, my money would usually be on Denzel Dumfries to be the more attacking, more creative... Yeah. More regular starter, and instead, if you look at his appearances, it's been a lot of second half substitutions, second half cameos, or half.
He struggled
changes.
With fitness for stretches of this year, so he had a muscle issue back in like the end of last year, and then another issue. I think he missed. The transfer market has him at missing 8 games. That's what I had down.
Okay.
So he's missed time there. It's also true that Dumfries has never been an elite defender. Like that's very much not his game. And so in some ways, despite his obvious talent, he is still a situational player. And he is a most situations player for Inter, but maybe not in every situation and definitely not when he's not fit.
How dare you, Joe? Denzel Dumfries will always have a place in my heart because of his setting name. Him and Frankie de Aberdeen. But yeah, he's a good player. Just to get us back on track a little bit, some key players, Joe mentioned Bastoni. Just to do another quick beat on him, I agree entirely, Joe. He's so fantastic. If you look at his passing section on his FPE ref page, it's just all green and very high numbers. He's left-footed, so he gives you a good balance to that in our back three. And Zaghi also likes, as to Joe's point, he likes his left and right-sided defenders to overlap the wing-backs at times. So not only just to get forward, that is a movement that they do, and Bastoni is very, very good at that. I'm a huge fan, and he's only 24, so he's got a lot of good years ahead of him. Barella is the other superstar in this team, so I think there's three superstars. One is Bastoni, one is Lautaro Martinez, the other is Barella. Seems to have been around for ages, but is still only 27 years old. He is a box-to-box, all-action sort of player. He's got good passing numbers, but also a really strong presser individually. Antonio Conte loved him, and you can kind of see why. And then some other players that I would highlight. Federico DiMarco has been clutch for Inter this season on that left side. Scored some really important goals on that left
wing. He's got some ridiculous goals as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he is good for an absolute banger. And speaking of players, defensive players who have got a history of scoring bangers in big games, Benjamin Pavard, I thought, was a really smart pickup, because having him on the right side of the back three allows him to get forward. He's very comfortable at doing that, but also quite handy defensively. That's always been the thing with Pavard, is he's not necessarily a right back in the modern mold that people like to play right backs, almost as like attackers. So he's perfect for that right-sided position in the back three. So yeah, it's a good team from front to back.
Yeah, that Pavard World Cup goal, by the way, still possibly my favourite
one
World
of the
Cup
best
goal ever. It's the best. I think it's the best. I don't think you can hit it any better than that. That's my opinion.
You know how Joe was talking about the Hakan Çalhanoğlu pass? It's like one of those into the back of the net from 30 yards.
Glorious. Luke from Modern Family doing wonderful stuff for Inter as well. why don't we take another quick break? When we come back, we're going to answer the big question. Can this team win the Champions League? Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our Big Thing episode all about Inter Milan. We get to the big question, Graham. Can this team win Serie A?
Can they win Serie A? Yes, that's not where good. I thought you were going with that. Yeah, I think. Let me just check my work in here. 50 points. Yeah, I think they could do that.
Good, excellent. Now that one's ticked off. They can't win the treble this season, unfortunately, because they went out early doors in the Coppa Italia. But Champions League still very much on. Would you be surprised, as the many Italians, as you mentioned, are feeling very good about this team in terms of how they can go the distance in the Champions League? Would you be surprised if they did that this season?
So there are levels of surprise, right? I think I would be surprised, yes. Just because I still see Manchester City as the favourites, and then you've got Arsenal, Real Madrid, maybe PSG on their showing in the round of 16. But I certainly wouldn't count out Inter from making another run. So Simone Inzaghi has a real reputation for being a cup manager. Obviously, this season they're running away with the Scudetto. That is often sometimes it's used as an insult against managers, calling them a cup manager. But I think it's a compliment here, because in a one-off occasion, he has a very strong track record of setting up his team to be successful, to combat the opposition. We saw that to a certain extent in the Champions League final against Manchester City, who won the treble, one of the greatest teams of all time, and Inter largely nullified them. So I can understand the confidence. In terms of their weaknesses and why they might not do it, I think structurally there aren't many structural weaknesses. I think the wing-backs can sometimes, even though they've got those wing-backs, in a low defensive block, they maybe don't have the most natural width in like the attacking third. I think that is a little bit of a wing-back. My biggest concern with this team is more to do with their individual talent level. So as we've kind of covered, they've got some exceptional players, and Inzaghi has done a really good job of repurposing some players. But he's still repurposing some players. You know, they're not natural in those positions. Mkhitaryan is one in central midfield. Çalhanoğlu, as good as he has been this season, I kind of wonder how he does against a high-pressing Arsenal or City. How will he cope with that kind of pressure on top of him? Jan Sommer, a good goalkeeper, very good goalkeeper, but in terms of how he uses the ball, he's not Ederson or even Onana. No, Onana has his other faults, but he's very good at passing out from the back. So up against the best teams in Europe, which is where we're at with the Champions League this season, I just think other teams have better players. And I know that's simplistic, but that's the reality of football. That is a big deciding factor.
Mm. It is. And I think I know exactly where you're coming from, Graham. I don't really disagree. I would say if they get past Atleti, that makes me feel somewhat more confident. Because I look at, let's say they were to get Bayern in the next round. I look at that Bayern team, as we talked about on yesterday's show, as being like very erratic. We don't know really when they're going to be very good or when they're going to be poor. We don't know if now that they're better, now that Thomas Tuchel has announced he's leaving. And I would, like, if they had drawn Bayern in this round, I would have been like, well, that's Inter done. But with them getting past Atleti, a team that I think of as being very difficult, especially in the Champions League knockout rounds, even if they're having somewhat of an off year in La Liga, I still think that is a sign that you can beat a team that is going to be incredibly disciplined, incredibly well-drilled, incredibly difficult to break down. It does give me hope, I guess is the wrong word, because I'm not an Inter supporter necessarily, but it gives me belief that they can go against some teams that do have more individual talent and still find a way to get through them, because they got through a team that had talent and discipline and coaching. It does make me think there's a chance they can go somewhat far. But then Graham reminds me that last year in the Champions League final, they got to the final, they played Man City, they did not get past Man City, and I don't know if this team can get past them this year.
Mm. Joe, do you concur?
Yeah, I don't have this team down as a favorite to win the Champions League, but they're real good. I look at the bookmakers and they're fifth in the favorites race to win the whole thing, behind City, Real Madrid, Arsenal, and Bayern in that order. That feels about right, maybe a little low, but they are outside of certainly City and Real Madrid, even after their performance early this week. For me, there's just still a lot of things to like about this team. Like, the quality is there, and I wouldn't be floored. Like, it wouldn't be this thing coming completely out of left field for Inter to go. And I mean, they made the final last year, and the squad got better from then to now. So I don't really think it would be framed as a complete shock, but it would be a surprise, right? Yeah. Pound for pound, this team, just player for player. And I made this point a couple of weeks ago on the show. Like, how many of these Inter players would make the starting 11 for a Manchester City or for Real Madrid? I don't think it's zero. Graham, you mentioned Lautaro Martinez, who I think would get real minutes for Real Madrid. There is quality in the midfield that I think would break in for Arsenal or for some of these other teams as well. It's not zero, but they just don't have the top-end talent to match Vinicius Jr. and Bellingham.
Yeah. A big part of the belief in Italy that Inter can go the full distance this season in the Champions League is this idea that they made the final last year and they're better than last season. I would agree with the second part of that. They are better. I'm just looking, reminding myself of their run in the Champions League last season. They had Porto, then Benfica, then AC Milan to make the final. That's a very favourable run to make a Champions League final. And to Taylor's point, the first tier one team they came up against, look, I've mentioned that a couple of times. Yes, they limited Manchester City. They restricted them better than most teams have recently. Still lost that game. So we've yet to see them really, you know, knock off a tier one team in the Champions League. That has to be the next step for them.
Joe, I don't mean to put you on the spot because I don't know what other stats you looked up. Graham had mentioned how does that midfield handle a pressing team. Do you feel like that midfield is press resistant? Do you feel like Inter as a whole are particularly press resistant?
Yeah, absolutely. That really wouldn't be a huge concern for me. Not that, you know, it's easy to play out of a press, but it's not. This team has the quality to do that. I'd be more concerned the other way, right? I look outside of the talent. Again, real talent in this team. Are they Manchester City? No, right? I don't think anybody even in Milan would disagree with that. The other concern I have is the midfield. And Inzaghi has done a good job of covering up for their lack of mobility. Barella has a little bit of bite. Absolutely. Graham talked about that earlier. But the others, Calhanoglu and Mkhitaryan, 30 and 35 respectively. Like this spine, you toss in De Vrij at the middle of the back line is 32. This spine is old. You know, the outside center backs bring youth and athleticism, and we've talked about that. But the spine struggles to go and to be aggressive in the press, and they struggle to control games if they don't have the ball and don't have the luxury of sitting in a deeper block. So if this team goes down by a goal in a big game and they have to start to press the game, they have to start to engage higher up the field defensively, that's a concern. If they're in a mid-block or if they're caught in a transition moment and the midfield can't recover in time, that is a concern. So there are some tactical weak points that you can go if you're an opposing manager and sort of, you know, slide a knife into the little crack there and start to push it in. But they're not everywhere. It's still, you add enough of them together and the talent side of things, and you have a difficult run ahead of Inter, but again, not an impossible one.
All right, so the jury's out on whether Inter can go the distance in the Champions League, Joe, but you did mention earlier in the episode about Inzaghi creating a legacy. How do we feel about those prospects in terms of maybe in Serie A becoming like the next Juventus in terms of dominating for a period of time? Are the economic constraints on this league preventing that, in that they have to, as we've mentioned, sort of rebuild each year when they lose managers, when they lose key talent? Do we think there's the potential here for this to keep going for a few seasons?
The potential is there. It's difficult, but the potential is there. And I think the point that's been made about the construction of Serie A and the financial challenges, all that stuff is very real and makes this stuff difficult. There is a clear hierarchy in European soccer, and Serie A is not the top dog. So that makes building a dynasty and maintaining one very, very challenging. What I will say is I think Inter have transitioned their squad remarkably well from one season to the next. It seems like somebody should have come calling and made a move for Lautaro Martinez by now, but really, he is the one player in this team who I think is who will really hurt when he's gone, right? We've seen this group transition from last year to this year. Even if you lose Martinez, you're going to hurt. But Inter have hit on so many transfers that you feel good about them going out and trying to find somebody who can give them 15, 16, 18 goals in a league season, and maybe Thuram steps up a bit in his absence. So I think the potential, especially with all the dysfunction around Inter at the top of Serie A, where it is the two Milan clubs that it seems to me are doing the best stuff right now. It's not Juventus. It's certainly not Napoli after winning the title last year. Between the level of chaos that surrounds them towards the top of the table in Serie A and between the good work that they have done internally, if there's going to be a team to put together season after season of very good title-winning soccer, it's going to be Inter over in Italy.
Oh, Bologna, I thought you were going to say. Sorry.
Yeah, Bologna. Yep. Yeah. Or obviously the greatest manager of all time leading Roma now, of course.
I understand what you all are saying about the limitations of Italian football such as they are now. Am I wrong in saying that a lot of the issues that Inter have had and some of the instability relate to their ownership group? Because it's Suning Group, who are a Chinese company. I feel like the last time we talked about Inter, or one of the times we talked about Inter and their ownership group, it was that they were sort of part of that Chinese expansion into global soccer. We're bringing over stars to China. We want more foreign ownership, or we want to own more foreign clubs. And then that sort of initiative went away. And I think with that, a lot of the funding went away. And it feels like Inter have had to operate in that sort of deficit as a result. Maybe that has turned around. Maybe that has improved. But I do think there is a large part of this for Inter that has been their ownership group. So I don't want to, it just sounded for me for a moment like we were just saying, like, yeah, Italy just has limitations. You can't just spend that much. And I think you can if you have an ownership group that allows that to happen. I'm right. Not sure Inter do.
Yeah, the challenge is it seems like those groups are few and far between. Like, it's hard to find a club towards the top of Serie A or anywhere in Serie A or Italy as a whole that isn't cash-strapped or having some sort of financial challenge at the moment. So
how dare you say that about Napoli? They're doing so, so well, Joe. Yeah, they're, what are you talking about?
They're thriving after last season. I mean, that goes to illustrate the point.
Also, Joe, how dare you say that about San Siro neighbors Milan with their American-owned Redbird Capital Partners?
Redbird, fly, baby.
Yeah, there we go. Doing great. Excellent. All right.
I don't know if that was an intentional or unintentional Scarface reference, but it sure felt like one, Joe.
What do you think, Taylor? What does your gut say?
Fly, Pelican.
On that note, we are going to wrap up this big thing. Joe Lowry, thank you very much for your filmic references and everything else in this episode.
Thank you, Ryan.
Graham Ruthen, pleasure as always, my good man.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey, from me and Frankie de Aberdeen.
Grazie a te, la tu sei la mia principessa.
Sure.
All right then, listener, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. We'll be back on the feed very shortly, but for now, bye!